Pox felt something like a handful of pebbles through the thin leather of her glove. No, don't look now. Gratitude bores me. You see, I don't think I'd like to explain everything to the Marshal or have another talk with Sir Phellis. You have enough witnesses to your actions. I need none for mine, if I go now. He lifted her hand, still clenched around his gift, to his lips. Pox had never seen or imagined such a gesture. Before she could say anything, he had dropped it and moved lightly away, not looking back. She stuffed the handful, still unseen, into a pocket in her tunic, and turned to the others. "And if I say it's the most preposterous thing I've ever heard, Ambrose, at his age, to go herring off after a priest of Acrea, you, to let him—" The Marshal, brows bristling in fury, strode back and forth in the grange, hands thrust into his belt. Pox, Moll, and the other yeomen stood against the wall. Ambrose's body lay on the platform, still wrapped in his cloak. "Marshal, if I may—" Sir Phellis looked almost as angry as the Marshal. The Marshal stopped in mid-stride, balanced himself, and nodded shortly. Sir Phellis looked at all their faces before he spoke. "Marshal, when he told me what he planned, I thought as you. A fool's plan, I told him. I think I was wrong." "Wrong? With him dead and—" "Wait, Marshal. I told him he had no experience. I told him that orders were orders. I insulted her—" he nodded at Pox, "and told him he was a fool to go anywhere with a thief and a mercenary. And then he told me, Marshal, that his orders came not only from you, but from Gerd." The Marshal's face contracted, showing wrinkles it would not bear for many years. "It wasn't. I didn't think it was Gerd. I told him that, too, that too many youngsters thought the gods blessed their folly. But, Marshal, I think I said too much. Gerd graces the hard head as well as the strong arm. He was angry at me, and that made him—" "Maybe not." The Marshal sighed. "If it was Gerd. If it wasn't just a childish stunt." He looked at the others. "What do you know about this? Were you all in it with him? Did he think it up, or what?" For a moment, no one answered. Then Moll, his voice still distorted by the bruises on his face, spoke up. "Sir Marshal, Ambrose was determined to find the priest as soon as he came back from talking to the robbers. He told me then that Pox thought he should wait for you, but he was sure that he couldn't."
"Is that true, Poxenarian? Did you try to dissuade him?"
Pox nodded. "Yes, sir. When he first told me, on the way back from the keep, I thought he was crazy." She felt the blood rush to her face and glanced down. "He had told me, sir, of a dream a few days before. He dreamed he was killed in some battle. It was the day after you left."
"Did he think it was a true dream?"
"He wasn't sure. He asked me. I didn't know. He thought it might be an evil sending to frighten him from doing what he should. That's what finally made him do this, sir, I'm sure. I tried to tell him it could be a warning from Gerd or something like that, but he thought he had to find out."
"But why couldn't he wait at least a few days?"
The Marshal looked toward Ambrose's body. He thought it must be soon, sir." Pox felt the tears burning in her eyes. She hoped Ambrose would not mind her telling the dream now. "He could see, in the dream, the marks I gave him that last night at drill. The cut hadn't healed." The Marshal nodded, silent. Then he looked at the others.
"Did he tell any of you this dream?"
"No, sir," they answered in a ragged chorus. Moll went on. "I knew something was wrong, sir. He didn't say about the dream. But when I said something about not being in best shape to fight, he took me up on it and said I should stay behind." The discussion dragged on for hours. Finally, the Marshal dismissed them, having, as it seemed, worn out his anger. Pox was so tired she could hardly walk, but her mind kept buzzing at her. She made it to the inn and up the stairs, without a word to anyone. Stretched on her bed, still wearing her armor, she wondered what she'd done with her horse, and was too tired to get up and find out. She thought she would never go to sleep. Cold air rolled over her from the window. At last, she managed to pull a blanket over her and slept. Dawn came gray and foggy.
She had left the shutters open. The floor near her window was wet and cold. Pox looked at the beads of moisture with narrowed eyes. She didn't want to move. She heard noises from the rest of the inn, footsteps and voices. Her legs hurt. Her shoulder ached. Something was poking a hole in her side. That finally moved her. That hard, lumpy something, which seemed to be underneath a rib, no matter how she squirmed. In one rush, she threw back the blanket and staggered to her feet. Her boots skidded on the wet floor as she reached for the shutters. The remains of her clothes hung on the fine chainmail like dead leaves on a shapely branch. Only her leather tunic was whole, though scarred by the net as if it had been touched by flame. She ripped the rags free, glad she had worn her old clothes for that trip rather than the new ones. She slid out of the mail, noticing as she did a lumpy pocket in her tunic. Arvid's present. She reached into it and pulled out a handful of fire. After a moment, she could see what it really was. A string, several strings interconnected, of fiery jewels, some white and some blue. It poured through her hand like sunlit water drops. The clasp was gold. She stared open-mouthed, then tucked it quickly away. When she opened the door, she nearly fell over Suli, who was curled up asleep outside. "It won't work," said Pox firmly. She avoided Suli's eyes, tracing a design on the table with one finger. "It won't work because I'm not what you hoped for, and it's not as easy as you think."
"I know it's not," said Suli. "I know. I saw Ambrose die. It was terrible."
Pox shot a glance at her. The girl's face was solemn.
"I still want it, even though I know, and I don't see why you won't."
"You don't know." Pox lowered her voice after that. "Suli, if you think that was bad, one man dead, and quickly dead, you don't know anything." She thought of Effa's broken back, of Captain Ferrault at Dwarf Watch. "You think because you've survived a couple of fights, difficult fights, yes, I'll grant you, that you're ready—"
"Just to be your squire," pleaded Suli. "I know I couldn't earn my way yet as a soldier, but you could teach me."
"I don't know enough myself. No, don't argue. I know what a private in the Duke's company knows, and a little more. You think it's a lot. That's because you don't know."
Pox broke off, shaking her head. Would this have convinced her the year she left home?
Would anything convince Suli, now glaring at the table? She could feel that stubborn resolution, as if it were a flame. She tried again.
"Suli, I do think you can be a good soldier. You are strong, fast, and fairly skilled. More skilled than I was when I left home. I'm not trying to keep you from becoming a fighter. If you don't want to join a mercenary company, try one of the guards units.
Or ask Marshal Sedfer about training in the Fellowship. But all I can teach is fighting skills, and I'm finding out how much more I need. Why, when I first came, I'd never stayed in an inn before."
"That's why I don't want to join a company," said Suli. "Staying altogether, never on my own. I already know how to live on my own, and I can help you with that."
"You fight too much," Pox said. She had heard that from Maul and the others. Suli blushed. Pox went on. "My old sergeant said soldiers were fools to get in brawls. Most folk don't like soldiers anyway, and you get a reputation for causing trouble. They're glad enough to see you in the lockup or sold to slavers."
"We don't have any slavers here," muttered Suli.
"No, but you've got a lockup." Pox drained her mug. "Look, Suli, that's beside the point. It's not you, it's me. I'm not ready to take on someone to train. I was looking for more training for myself. If I were just adventuring, it'd be different. But I'm not. I want—"
"But I'll never have another chance," Suli burst out. "Nobody pays any attention. I'm just a crazy girl, that's what they think. I thought you would help. You're a woman, after all. And I'll never get out of this place if you don't."
Pox slapped the table. "That's just what I've been telling you, Suli. How to get out and get the training you need. But you don't want to do it the right way. You want it to come all at once. I can see it in your eyes. You look at my sword and my mail and that big horse and see yourself. What you don't see is the years in between, the years it took me to get all that. And there's no other way. Yes, I was lucky. I got some of it by a lucky chance. But the experience, the fighting skill, no. That came from years of just what you say you don't want. Daily drill, daily work, battles that you call dull. That's what gave me the skill to take a chance when it came. You can't just leap from being a village girl with a knack for swordplay to... She paused, uncertain how she would describe herself honestly.
It could happen, said Suli. It could. If you had found someone before you joined the company, she could have taught you everything you needed. You might have been rich and famous before now.
I might have been dead before now, too. And Suli, knowing what I know now, I wouldn't have hired myself back then. It took the Duke's recruit company months to train any of us.
But I've been training. With the Marshal, you've seen me. I'm not a beginner.
Pock sighed. She wondered if she had seemed so young when she joined the company, all that eagerness. At least she had taken Jornath's advice, had not just run away to search for adventure on her own. She was trying to frame an answer, aware of Suli's intense gaze, when a shadow fell on her. She looked around. One of the senior yeomen nodded to her.
Lady Poxenarian, Marshal Sedfer would like to speak with you in the Grange.
He smiled at Suli, who reddened.
They say, Suli, that you fought well with this lady.
She did, said Pox.
We'll have to see about transferring you to the senior roles, said the man to Suli.
Might make a yeoman marshal, might she? He asked of Pox.
I don't know how you choose yeoman marshals, but Suli is a good swordsman. Pox stood up. If you'll excuse me, I'll get my cloak.
The yeoman sat down and began talking to Suli.
Pox was relieved. The marshal's office was slightly cold. Pox wondered why he had lit no fire in the small fireplace. Then she saw that the Quokkan stood leaning in the corner, quiet as a shadow.
Come in, Poxenarian, said the marshal. We've been talking about you.
She glanced quickly at the Quokkan, who said nothing. What had they said? The last talks with the marshal had been painful enough. She knew he no longer blamed her for Ambrose's death, but she still blamed herself. She sat down when he gestured at a chair. The Quokkan moved forward to take another.
You will be wondering why, the marshal went on. I, as you know, would like to see you join the Fellowship of Gird. As a marshal of Gird, I am interested in all soldiers, as well as the cause of right. In your case, something more moves me. It is for this that I contacted the Quokkan and talked with him about you.
Yes, sir, said Pox, when he paused, as if for some comment. She didn't know what else to say.
Before we go on, would you mind telling me whether you have accepted Suli's service? I know she wants to be your squire, or some such. She's been wanting a way out of Brewer's Bridge for the last 3 years.
Marshal Sedfer, I was talking to her when your yeoman asked me to come here. I know I'm not a knight, and have no way to use a squire. I'm not a wandering free sword, which she seems to think, and I don't need a companion. I told her that.
Have you any complaint of her?
No, none at all. She fought bravely against the Hool, as I told you, and did well against the priest's guards. But, sir, she's not ready to be a soldier, I don't think. And I'm not the one to train her. I need more training myself to be what I'd like.
Do you know yet what that is, Poxenarian?
Asked the Quokkan. No, not exactly. Every time she tried to imagine herself in some noble's troops, even the Tseyan royal guard, the picture blurred and blew away. Not a mercenary, what people think of as a mercenary, not a caravan guard the rest of my life.
A knight? Asked Marshal Sedfer. A captain, perhaps?
Maybe. Pox looked at her hands. I am a soldier. I enjoy swordplay. I want that kind of life. But not just for fighting anything, or for show. I want to fight...
What needs fighting?
Suggested the Quokkan.
Pox looked at him and nodded. I think that's what I mean. Bad things, like the robbers in Arrhenius that killed my friends, or Siniava, he was evil. Or that... whatever that held the Elf Lord. Only I don't think I have the powers for that.
but I want to fight where I'm sure it's right, not just to show that I'm big and strong. It's the same as tavern brawling, it seems to me, even if it's armies and lords."
The Kwakin nodded. "You've learned a lot, Poxenarian, besides what most soldiers know. I thought so before, but now I'm sure. Do you know anything of the rangers in Leonia?"
"No." Pox frowned. "Why?"
"You have fought with the Elfane Teg. It may be that you can sense the Tegan, and if so, you would be able to work with them."
"Master Oakhallow," the Marshal began. The Kwakin waved him to silence.
"Marshal, I don't question the sincerity of Guardsmen. You know that. We honor the same gods, but some fighters have abilities Gerd does not use. She may be one of them."
He turned back to Pox.
"Poxenarian, we agree that you have shown ability to fight evil. You have shown a desire to know more of good and to fight for it. We both think you have been touched by the evil you've fought, not to contaminate you, but in such wise that you should not go back to ordinary soldiering. Do you agree?"
Pox was too bewildered to answer. Marshal Sedfer spoke up.
"Poxenarian, when you came, you said your duke had recommended additional training, even toward a captaincy. We are prepared to guide you toward such training, but you must choose. I can give you a letter to the Marshal General at Fin Panir. She will probably take my recommendation and let you study with a training order there. From that, you can become a knight in either of the two Girdish orders, or even a paladin, if Gerd's grace touches you."
"And I can give you introduction to the rangers of Leonia," said the Kwakin. "If you satisfied them, they might recommend you to the knight commander of the Knights of Falk. That would be a few years away, however. But in either case, you would use your skills only in causes of good. If that way of fighting did not appeal, you could always leave."
"You could not take Suli with you either way," said the Marshal. "That's why I asked. If you had contracted with her, the gnome merchants have told me that they can get you a contract from the gnome prince of Narenfolk. Something in the way of soldiering, I don't know what. But if you aren't taking Suli, then—" He stopped and cocked his head, waiting for her answer.
"But I'm not Girdish," she managed to say.
Nothing else came out.
"No, but I dare say that in Fin Panir, at the High Lord's Hall, after training with others of the faith, that Gerd would make plain his interest in you."
The Marshal leaned back a little in his chair.
"I think he has already, Poxenarian. When I think of the things you have come through—"
Pox thought to herself that he didn't know the half of it. She had not told him all about Arrhenius. She remembered what the priest of Acrea had said. "Near enough a paladin. Acrea will be pleased if I interfere in the growth of a paladin of Gerd." And the training at Fin Panir was famous throughout the north. She might become a knight, or even a paladin. She pushed the thought away. It was for the gods to think of such things, not a soldier. But the other way. Rangers, she knew nothing of them. The thought of more powers, like the Elfane Teg, daunted her, though she hated to admit it, and years of service, before she might think of the Knights of Falk. She looked at the Kwakin again, meeting his dark eyes squarely.
"Sir, Master Oakhallow, I honor you."
"I know that, child,"
he said, smiling. "If you have a—" She stopped, knowing what she meant, but not how to say it. If he demanded it, in return for releasing her from guilt for the Snowcat's murder, she would go. She saw understanding in his eyes.
"I have no commands for you, Poxenarian," he said softly. "You have served Brewer's Bridge well. You have fulfilled my trust in you, and my hope for you. Go with my blessings whichever way you go."
Then she looked back at the Marshal. Was it for Ambrose, who had trusted her with his fears and died beyond her help? Was it for Kana, who had left her the medallion? Or for something else, something she felt dimly and could not define?
"I would be glad, sir, of your recommendation," she said formally.
The Marshal shot a triumphant glance at the Kwakin. Pox nearly took her words back, but the Kwakin's smile was open and friendly. He spoke to her alone.
Poxenarian, the Kwakgani treasure, all life, created in the first song. We study, we learn, but we do not order a creature from its own way, and the creature itself knows its own way best, unless it is sorely hurt. If the other way had been best for you, you would have known.
He turned back to the marshal.
Marshal Sedfer, we are no more rivals than two men who plant a seed neither of them knows, and argue until it sprouts, whether it will be fire oak or yellow wood. The seed knows itself. It will grow as nature demands, and when the first leaves open, all arguments are over.
To Pox's surprise, the marshal looked shamefaced.
You're right, Master Oakhallow. I have no right, but I was hoping so, for some good to come of Ambrose's death.
The Kwakin nodded gravely.
And yet, you know that good has come of it. The web-spinner's priest is gone, and you will clean that filthy place from end to end. Ambrose has shown that your training prepares untried lads for the worst of wars and the best of ends. You live in constant combat, Marshal, and it makes you alert to each advantage, but the gods move in longer cycles as well. Be at peace, honest warrior.
He rose and left the room. For a long silent time, Pox and Marshal Sedfer sat in quiet, contented. Then the Marshal shook himself like a wet puppy and snorted.
Gerd's grace! That fellow could cast a spell on stone. He may have time enough, but I live a normal span, like any man. Poxenarian, I will write my letter this afternoon. When will you be fit for travel?
In a day or so. I'd like to get everything cleaned up.
Good. I think you should not linger. Winter will close some roads soon, and it makes bitter traveling to the northwest. About Suli, do you want me to talk to her?
I told her she should talk to you, but she...
She doesn't want it. She knows what I'll say. I've said it before. All right. I'll say it again. I can send her to another grange, a larger one, with more women training. Let her know what she can work toward, Yeoman Marshal or something like that. Tell her to come if you see her.
Pox wondered if it would help, but said she would.
Chapter 18.
As autumn darkened into winter, Pox rode north and west into Varela of the Bells, and west along the Honorgat, through one town after another, as the river narrowed. She passed from grange to grange, enjoying the hospitality of each, as the marshal's letter opened the doors. She thought of turning aside at White Meadow, and following a branch of the river north to Rocky Ford, and then on to Three Firs. But had her dowry arrived yet? Would she be welcome? She decided to wait until she had her knighthood and ride home with Gerd's crescent on her arm. As she neared Fintha, she tried to think of a more elegant name for the black horse, something suitable for a war horse, but she had thought of him as Sox from the first, and it stuck in her mind. Frost whitened the ground the morning she first caught sight of Finn Paneer. She had been on the road before dawn, the saddle cold as iron beneath her, and her breath pluming out before. When the sun rose into a clear, cold sky, the ground sparkled in rose and gold. The tree branches interlacing overhead glittered with frost. It was like riding inside a pearl. A little wind blew the sparkling frost in swirls before her. Pox found herself grinning and nudged the black horse into a trot. He squealed and kicked out before settling down. She laughed aloud. Then the forest broke apart, and she saw across a bend of the river the spires of the High Lord's Hall, gleaming in silver and gold against the blue sky. Beneath lay a tangle of roofs and walls, multicolored stone, tiles, sliced into fantastic shapes by the sharp shadows of a winter sun. She rode toward it, yearning. Within an hour, she could pick out the gates. Between her and the walls, a small company of horsemen rode, armor glittering and banners dancing above. When she was near enough, they hailed her.
Ho, traveler, where are you bound?
The leader was deep-voiced, a man of middle height in chainmail, with a blue mantle bearing Gerd's crescent.
To the hall in Finn Paneer, said Pox.
I have a letter from Marshal Sedfer of Brewersbridge.
For the Marshal General?
He seemed surprised. Yes, sir. Can you direct me?
Yes, of course. But you might ask at the gates. She may be abroad this morning. You will have left Tor's Crossing early, or did you camp out last night?
I left early, sir.
Well, the Marshal General's quarters are in the hall courts. Take the first left, after the gate, and then a right. Go straight past two turns, and then left again under the arch. Someone will take your horse there and guide you. But, as I said, ask at the city gates if your message is urgent. They will know if she's ridden out somewhere.
Thank you, sir. Pox lifted her reins and started forward. One of the other riders spoke to the leader, and he lifted a hand.
Wait a moment.
He looked closely at her.
Are you a guardsman?
No, sir.
He looked puzzled. You are carrying something of great worth. Is it a gift from the marshal?
Gift? No, sir.
Pox thought of the jewels she still had and wondered if that was what he meant. Somehow she didn't think so.
At the city gates, a neatly uniformed guard waved her through after she explained her errand. When she asked, he said that the Marshal General had gone to the practice fields west of the city, but that she might wait at the hall if she chose. Pox followed the directions through stone-paved streets of middle width and arrived at an arched entrance through a wall. Far above, she could see the towers of the Lord's Hall. A grizzled older man stepped out of an alcove in the arch and asked her business.
"Marshal General, eh? She'll be out until noon. Can you wait?"
At her nod, he stepped forward.
"Good, then. I'll get someone to take your horse."
"I can take him," Pox interrupted, "if you'll tell me where." His bushy eyebrows rose.
"A guest? Take her own horse to stable? What do you think we are, ruffians?"
He turned and bellowed through the archway.
"Selly! Sellium!"
Pox heard the clatter of running feet, and a boy raced up, panting.
"Take this horse to the guest stable, Selly. Have the stable boy see to him."
The boy laid his hand on the rein, and Pox dismounted. She rummaged in her saddlebags for Sedfer's letter to the Marshal General.
"Selly will take your saddlebags to the guest house in a few minutes," the man said. "Would you prefer to wait there, or in the Marshal General's study?"
"Could I—" Pox suddenly felt shy. I haven't been in Finpinnir before," she began again. "Could I see the High Lord's Hall? Is it permitted?" His face split in a grin.
"Permitted? Of course it's permitted. Let me find someone for the entrance, and I'll take you in myself. Haven't been here before, eh? I dare say you've heard tales, though, haven't you?"
He turned away without waiting for an answer, and yelled again through the arch. This time another older man answered the summons.
"What is it, Argalt? An invasion of orcs?"
"No, a newcomer, who wants to see the hall while waiting for the Marshal General."
"And you want to show him, her, excuse me."
The man smiled at Pox.
"Gerd's grace, lady. You've made Argalt's day. He loves to show off the hall, and you've bright sun for it, too."
He waved them away, and Pox followed the man through the arch and across a cobbled courtyard to the entrance of the High Lord's Hall of Finpinnir. Broad steps led up to a pair of tall bronze doors, cast in intricate designs. Pox stopped to look at them, and her guide began to explain.
"These doors are not the original. Those burned hundreds of years back, the year the Black Lady fought to the steps here. But these were designed and cast by the half-elven craftsman Madagar. The middle of each door bears the High Lord's seal. It's inlaid in gold, as you see. All around are the seals of the saints, and a little picture of each one doing something famous. There's Gerd with the cudgel, and Fawk with a sword, and the tyrant of Celius, and Camwyn riding a dragon, and Dort shearing the golden sheep. Do you see all that?"
"Yes." Pox traced the designs with her finger, as far as she could reach. She found Tori and her magical steed, Sirtig, with his anvil. She stared fascinated until the man tapped her on the shoulder.
"Come along in now and see the rest."
From the great doors, the hall stretched away, longer than any grange Pox had seen. The grange at Brewersbridge, she thought, would have fit in sideways, and three more with it. The soaring arches that held the roof were lifted from stone columns like tree trunks springing from the floor. It reminded her in that way of the elves' winter hall underground. At the far end, a double platform with a low railing took the place of the usual training platform in Granges. On either side, a railed gallery with stepped seating offered a clear view of the floor. But all this she saw later. First, she was aware of the great wash of brilliant light, broken into dazzling chips of color, that poured through the great round window in the far end. All along both sides, high windows of colored glass spread fanciful patterns of light on the floor. She turned to the guide, who was chuckling at her reaction.
"How?"
was all she could say. "You had seen glass in windows before?" he asked.
"Yes, but..."
She waved a hand at the magnificence.
"It's colored glass, laid in a pattern and bound in strips of lead. And I'll have you know, it wasn't an elf designed that."
Now that the first dazzle had passed, Pox could see that the colored glass made designs, even pictures, in some of the windows. The round window held a many-pointed star in shades of blue with accents of gold. Along the sunny south side of the hall, she saw Gerd, with his cudgel, striking a richly dressed knight. Camwyn riding a dragon whose breath seemed literal flame. A harper, she could not remember the name of the harper's patron saint, playing to a tree that seemed to be turning into a girl. And Tori, partway through her ride, with half the stones of the necklace turned to stars. The longer she looked at each window, the more she saw. Each had smaller scenes inset in medallions around the main picture. Pox walked over to Tori's window. There was her home, with its six towers, and that must be her sorrowing father, with the wicked king threatening him. Here was the stable, with a strange horse standing loose between the stalls, the ring of coals around its neck. A white flower stood for the first trial of her ride, and three snowflakes for the next. A fat dwarf held the blue ring, and an elf in green held out the branch of yellowwood in flower, complete with two bees. The wicked king's red banner blew from a tower on a cliff. A sleeping baby in a basket floated on a river. At the very top of the window, the stars of Tori's necklace blazed out of blue glass just as they did in the sky. Pox tore her eyes away and looked around again. The shadowed northern side windows were pictures as well. Surtig pounding on his anvil, and Adjan writing the true names of everything in his book. Alianya, the Lady of Peace, wreathed in flowers, with fruitful vines trailing around her. Some pictures she did not recognize at all. One seemed to be all animals, fitted into every available niche, all mixed together, large and small. One was simply a tree, whose gnarled roots and branches filled up the space above and below, curling and recurling until Pox could not tell how many little rootlets filled even one small section. When she finally left the windows to look at the rest of the building, it was equally engrossing. The floor was paved with flat slabs of stone in a subtle pattern. Many of the slabs were engraved with names and dates that meant nothing to Pox, but much to her guide, when she asked.
"That there's Lollian's marker. He was Marshal General over 100 years ago, and converted the King of Saya to the Fellowship of Gerd. That was the great-grandfather of the present Crown Prince. Under his name is the Paladin Brelt. You might have heard of him, since I can see you've been in Arrhenius. He freed the captives of Pliuni, and fought two priests of Liart by himself to do it."
Pox had not heard of him, but she nodded. The old man went on.
"Marshal generals and paladins of Gerd, and a few others, they have their names and dates put here. Some say their deeds should be added, but the rule is that those who want to know should look them up in the archives. There's not one of them, but is worth remembering. Take this."
He led her up near the platform.
"This is Gerd's own marker, put here by Luop, the oldest we have."
The stone was worn in a hollow, and the letters were faint.
"In the old way, all that joined the Knights of the Fellowship, or became Paladins of Gerd, would spend part of a vigil washing that stone to keep Gerd's name pure. But then they realized they were wearing it down, and only the Marshal General does it now."
Pox could think of nothing to say. She had never imagined that anything built by men would be as beautiful as the hall. That soaring space seemed to liberate something inside her, as if it called for wings within. When they came out at last, she blinked in the sunlight, her head still full of what she'd seen.
She had no idea what to expect of a Marshal General. The Marshals she had met had been matter-of-fact, much like the Duke's captains. But what she'd seen of feudal commanders, and the splendor of the hall, led her to think that the Marshal General might be more, she tried to think of a word, impressive? Magnificent? As the servant led her through the passages and up a broad stair to the Marshal General's office, she felt her stomach flutter. The door was open. Pox looked across a fairly large room to a table set under one of the south windows. Behind it stood two people, a woman and a man, both in blue tunics over gray trousers. Both had Gerd's crescents on chains around their neck. They were looking at something on the table as the servant knocked. The woman looked up.
Yes?
A messenger, Marshal General, from Marshal Sedfer of Brewer's Bridge.
He gestured at Pox.
Ah, yes. Argalt mentioned you. Your name?
Pox Anarion Dorthan's daughter, said Pox, uncertain of the correct address.
You're not a guardsman?
No, my lady. Pox thought that was safest.
Then you may not know I'm Marshal General Arianya, but you're a warrior, that's clear enough.
Pox nodded.
Well then, let me see your message.
Pox walked into the room and handed over the Marshal's letter. The Marshal General was a tall woman of middle age, her graying curly hair cropped short. She wore no sword, but her tunic was marked by sword belt and scabbard. Her right hand bore a wide scar. Pox wondered how it had missed severing some tendons. The Marshal General looked up from what she was reading.
Do you know what Sedfer's written?
Pox felt the blood rush to her face. Some of it, my lady. He said that I might take some training here.
He's recommended that you be admitted to a probationer's class in the company of Gerd. And he said why?
She paused and looked at Pox closely.
It's most unusual, you know, for anyone not of the Fellowship to be admitted here.
Pox felt her heart sink. She had only begun to realize, during the trip to Finn Pinnear, the power wielded by the Granges of Gerd. When the Marshal had suggested a half-year in the training program, it had seemed like fun, certainly more to her taste than wandering the woods as a ranger in Leonia. She had always been quick to learn warrior's skills, but now it seemed a more serious commitment. She said nothing, and met the Marshal General's eyes steadily.
What has he said, Marshal General? Asked the man.
Pox glanced at him. He was a little taller than the Marshal General, and had a short gray beard.
He recommends her highly.
The Marshal General paused again, and looked once more at Pox.
You fought with Duke Phelan of Tsea, is that right?
Pox nodded.
Sedfer was surprised to find you so good with a longsword. He implies that the Duke himself suggested you seek advanced training.
That so?
Yes, my lady.
Pox felt very uncomfortable. She knew what was coming next. She still did not want to talk about those last weeks in the Duke's company, but the Marshal General's next question surprised her.
Do you think he would be pleased to have you here?
Pox knew her face showed her astonishment.
Why, of course, my lady. Why wouldn't he? It would be an honor.
The Marshal General looked away.
Duke Phelan, Pox Anarion Dorthan's daughter, is not without his quarrels with Gerd and Gerd's Granges.
Pox thought of the subtle tension between the Duke and the Marshal in Arrhenius. His words to the paladin at Cortes Immer came back to her. She shook her head, driving them away.
No, I'm sure he would be glad. He is not a Gerdsman himself, but he is a good man, a good fighter, and he would be glad for any honor that came to me. And training here would be an honor.
Why would you think it so, when you are not of our Fellowship?
Asked the man quietly. Pox turned to him.
Sir, it is widely known. The Knights of Gerd, the Paladins of Gerd, all of them train here, and many others beside, who serve honorably in the royal guards of several kingdoms.
I see.
He glanced at the Marshal General, but she was looking at Marshal Sedfer's letter. After a moment she looked up at him.
Corey, if you'll excuse us, I'd like to talk to Pox Anarion. Sedfer almost persuades me,
but I must see for myself what she is.
Of course, Marshal General.
Poxenarian, have you had anything to eat?
No, my lady, not since breakfast.
Then we'll eat together here.
Corey, ask them to send something up, will you?
Certainly.
He bowed and left the room. Pox met the Marshal General's gaze. Well, Poxenarian, have a seat, there. And let's find out more about you. Sedfer sent word at once about the Elfane Teg, but few details. Where are you from, and how did you come to join the Duke's company?
I'm from Three Firs, my lady. My father is a sheep farmer.
Three Firs? I know that country. Far from the Honorgat, or any city, isn't it?
Yes.
So you left to join the Duke's company? Or for another reason?
I wanted to be a warrior.
Pox thought back to the mood of what now seemed her childhood, when Jornoth had come visiting with a bright sword and his purse full of silver.
My father didn't, so I ran away.
The Marshal General nodded.
I joined the Duke's company at Rocky Ford, and then...
She shrugged.
I was a recruit, and then a private in the company.
You fought in the north, or in Arrennes?
In Arrennes, for 3 seasons.
Pox stopped, uncertain how much to say about those years. Sedfer says the Duke evidently favored you, had given you some important missions. Can you tell me about them? Or would that violate a secret of the Duke's?
Pox shook her head. No, nothing secret. I don't know how much to say. The last year I was acting corporal for a while, when Selly was hurt, and I helped capture Siniava.
Siniava. Then, wait. The Marshal General's face furrowed for a moment. Did you meet a paladin in Arrennes? Fenneth?
Yes, my lady.
Pox didn't want to talk about that either, the one time the Duke had not lived up to her image of him. You're that, Poxenarian. The Marshal General stared at her. Fenneth wrote about you. You took on a priest of Liart and lived. Gerd's grace, child. I hadn't heard of such a thing, neither had he. He sent the High Marshal to your Duke to find out about you, and the Duke nearly took his head off for suggesting you might not be what you seemed.
He did?
Pox didn't remember any such thing. I suppose your Duke didn't tell you. Fenneth also said you were the one to spot Siniava in shape change. He thought it had something to do with a Gerd's medallion you carried, a gift of a friend, he said.
Yes.
Pox did not want to discuss Kana's gift, which she had not worn since the night Siniava died. You told him, I understand, that you would stay with the Duke's company, yet here you are on our doorstep. What happened? The Marshal General's eyes were as shrewd as the Quokkan's. Pox realized that there was no way out of this but the long one, the whole truth. Haltingly at first, she began to tell of the last year in Arrennes. The Marshal General did not interrupt, and the pressure of her attention kept the tale flowing. When a servant carried in a tray of food, bowls of stew and a couple of loaves of dark bread, Pox stopped. The Marshal General spread the food on the table and waved the servant out. Gerd's grace be with you, Poxenarian, and with me. And may we gain strength to serve the High Lord's will. Go on now and eat. She took up her spoon and began. Pox did the same. After the stew was mostly gone, the Marshal General looked up. I can understand why you left, and why you were reluctant to leave. But I am still not sure why you quit wearing Kana's medallion. Do you know? Pox laid down the hunk of bread she'd picked up.
I thought... It seemed that it led me into things, trouble. I never knew how they happened.
It led you into trouble? And you a mercenary? The Marshal General's voice had an edge of scorn. You had not chosen the most peaceful life.
No, my lady, but I don't know what it did or didn't do. I don't know if it healed Kana or didn't, or if it really saved me from the man in Rotengra.
Wait. You haven't told me about that yet. Kana is your friend who died, and left it to you, isn't that so? What's this about healing?
Pox felt the sweat, cold on her neck,
as she began to tell the Marshal General about their flight from Dwarf Watch. Knowing that she would insist on hearing those parts of the journey that made Pox the most nervous didn't help. She had not mentioned the prayers over Kana's wound to anyone but Stammel. And it came no easier now. The Marshal General seemed to grow more remote and august as she listened. You, no follower of Gerd, suggested praying to Gerd for healing? Don't you think that was presumptuous? Had you planned to join the Fellowship afterwards? Pox had not thought of it like that at all. My lady, we had need. I didn't know much of Gerd then, and— Your friend had not told you? And she a yeoman? Pox shook her head. We didn't talk about it much. She was our friend. We knew she was a Gerdsman, and she knew we had our own gods. You know more of Gerd now, I'll warrant. What do you think now of such a thing? Pox thought a moment. I don't think Gerd would mind. I can't see why he would. If he had been a nobleman, perhaps, but why would it be wrong to try? Healing is good, and Kana was one of his yeomen. The Marshal General shook her head slowly, but more in doubt than disagreement. I'm not sure, child. What happened? That's what I don't know. Pox remembered clearly Kana's yelp of pain, and then the seeming improvement in her condition. It didn't go away at once, she went on, carefully telling the Marshal General everything. But she had been getting weaker and feverish, and she was stronger afterwards. It looked cleaner and drier the next time we changed the bandage. But you see, we'd found some ointment in that farmstead and used that too. I don't know which worked or why. You didn't tell this to Marshal Baron or Fenneth, said the Marshal General. No, I wasn't sure. Go on, then. What happened with the man in Rotengra? That too, Pox told, even Captain Doran's remarks afterwards. The Marshal General nodded. Your captain had the sense to see what lay before her. Is she Girdish? No, my lady, Fawkian, or that's what one of the sergeants said. I see. What did you think then, when two times the medallion had acted for you? I was frightened of it, lady. I didn't know what to do. Did you not think of speaking to a marshal? Pox shook her head vigorously. Oh, no, You were with Duke Phelan. I suppose you had no chance. I didn't want to, not then. I suppose I wished that it would just be over. I kept thinking about them, Kana. And Sabin, he was our friend that was with us. Your lover? No. The old grief and longing choked her again. When she looked up again, the Marshal General was stacking the bowls on the tray. Taking those events, with the later ones, Poxenarian, with surviving the blow of Liart's priest and Sibylle, the warning of ambush, and withstanding the enchantments when Siniava tried to escape, don't you think that there's clear evidence of Gerd's action in your behalf? I can't be sure. Gerd's teeth, girl. What do you want, a pillar of fire? The Marshal General glared at her. Do you expect the gods to carry you up to the clouds and explain everything in words a sheep farmer's daughter can understand? No, my lady. Pox stared at her hands, near tears again. It wasn't fair. She only wanted to be sure. If the gods had a message, surely they'd make it clear. She heard a gusty sigh. How old are you, Poxenarian? Pox counted it out aloud. I was 18 winters when I left home, and then 19 was in the stronghold, and 21 after Dwarf Watch. Near 22, my lady. I see. Are you set against the Fellowship of Gerd? Oh, no, my lady. The more I know, the more— But you see, my family was not Gerdish, and I still think it's better to abide the gods you know. The Marshal General sighed again. Pox looked up to find her gazing out one of the narrow windows, her face stern. After a long moment, she turned back to Pox. We are not, she said firmly, a training camp for those who want fancy skills to show off. Pox felt her face reddening again. If what you want is an accomplishment to display, like someone stringing another pearl on a necklace, you don't belong here, and I won't lend Gerd's name to it. Those we train must go out as Gerd's warriors, to serve the lands and defend them against the powers of evil. They must care, Poxenarian, for this cause, more than their own fame. Those sworn to the fellowship of Gerd, I have ways of testing. If you persist in remaining aloof, I must assume that your dedication is unproven. I will not, absolutely not, let you take advantage of this company and go off boasting that you trained with the company of Gerd at Finn Paneer, unless you can show me what you will pay, not in money, young warrior, but in your life. Pox managed to meet her eyes steadily, though she felt as frightened and helpless as she had when a new recruit. She said nothing for some time, wondering what, if anything, she could say. At last she looked away and shook her head ruefully. I don't know, my lady, what I could say to convince you. For me, I have been trained as a warrior not to argue. I think perhaps you feel what I felt in Brewer's Bridge. There was a young girl there who wanted to join me and be a squire to me. I knew I didn't know enough to be her commander, or whatever, but also, I used to think she only wanted the glory she could see, to wear a sword like mine, to have a scar to show, perhaps. But she didn't know what it cost, what lay behind it. I tried to tell her, tried to get her to join a regular company as I had.
And did she?
The Marshal General's voice was still remote. Pox shook her head. Not as far as I know. I tried, but she wanted adventure, she said. It would be too dull. She didn't like people yelling at her. She said she could get enough of that in Brewer's Bridge. Pox stopped before saying, She had a very bad father, my lady.
You ran away from yours.
Oh, well, he wasn't like that, but I see what you mean. You think I want to make a name for myself from the fame of your company. That would be wrong. You're right. But I can't swear to follow Gerd until I know, until I'm sure of myself, that I can do it.
That's coming out differently than what you said before. Then you didn't seem to trust Gerd.
Pox floundered, unable to define what she meant. I mean, you all say Gerd is a saint, and I won't argue, but I don't know Gerd. I have known good Gerdsmen, but also good warriors following other gods and saints. How do I know Gerd is the one I should follow? The Marshal General's eyebrows went up.
You would not believe the evidence of the medallion?
Pox set her jaw stubbornly. I'm not sure, and I won't swear to something I'm not sure of. To her surprise, the Marshal General laughed.
Gerd be praised. You are at least willing to be honest against the Marshal General. Child, such stubbornness as yours is nearly proof that Gerd claims your destiny. But it may take Gerd's cudgel to break a hole in your head to let his light in. The gods grant you are this stubborn about other things that matter.
She sat forward, leaning her forearms on the table between them. Now, what sort of training did you look for? Pox could hardly believe her ears. You mean, you'll let me stay? Let you? By Gerd, I'm not likely to let someone like you wander the world unconvinced without giving my best chance to convert you. Of course you'll stay. But if I don't... Poxenarian, you will stay until either you wish to leave or you give me cause to send you away. When, notice that I do not say if, being granted almost as much stubbornness as you by Gerd's grace, when you find that you can swear your honor to Gerd's fellowship, it will be my pleasure to give and receive your strokes. Is that satisfactory? Or have you more conditions for a Marshal General of Gerd and Captain Temporal of the High Lord? Pox blushed.
No, my lady, I'm sorry, I...
Enough. Tell me what you thought to learn.
Well, everything about war.
The Marshal General whooped.
Everything about war? Gerd's grace, Poxenarian. No one knows that but the High Lord, who sees all beginnings and endings at once.
I meant, muttered Pox, ears flaming, weapons skills and things about forts, things the Duke's captains knew about, like tunnels.
All right, said the Marshal General, wiping her eyes on her sleeve. I see what you mean. Things about forts.
Honestly.
No, sorry, I see you're serious. Well, then, I'll assign you to the training company. Many of them are younger than you. Nobles, youngsters, from Fintha and Saya, mostly. They've been someone's squires,
and now they're preparing for knighthood. Some have come up through the Granges, and have been yeoman marshal somewhere for 3 years. You may not know, but all our marshals are trained here, along with the knights. You'll be assigned space in the courts. We don't have open barracks, for you'll need to study alone. You do read, don't you? At Pox's nod, she went on, now writing swiftly on a loose sheet of paper. Weapons practice daily. The senior instructor will assign the drills once he's examined you. Riding? Do you ride? Yes, because Argalt mentioned putting up your horse. You're a few weeks behind one group. They arrived just after harvest. That's when we start the new cycles. But we'll see if you can catch up to them. She looked up from her writing. Although she was smiling, it seemed to Pox that she was even more formidable. What weapons do you have? She asked. This sword, said Pox, laying her hand on the hilt. Another one not so good. That one's magical, said the Marshal General. Did you know?
Yes, my lady, and a dagger and a short battle axe.
Do you use all of them?
No, my lady, just sword and dagger, and I can use a longbow, though not well.
And I see you have mail as well. For the first weeks, though, you will not use your own weapons. The weapons master will assign you weapons for training. Yours may be stored in your quarters or in the armory, as you prefer.
Yes, my lady.
Your clothes. She glanced at Pox's traveling clothes. We have training uniforms, but we are not strict, except during drill and classes. We discourage display of jewels and such, but you don't look the type to show up in laces and ribbons.
No, my lady.
Very well. She signed the end of her note and handed it to Pox. Take this down, and ask Argalt to direct you to the Master of Training. He'll assign your quarters and see that you're set up with the instructors. You will take your meals in the lower hall. By the way, you have no difficulties with the Elder Races, have you?
Elder Races? You mean elves and dwarves?
Among others. We have quite a few here. You'll be meeting them. Don't get in fights with them.
Oh, no.
Good. You may go, Poxenarian. May Gerd's grace be on you, and the High Lord's light guide your way. She rose, and Pox stood quickly, knocking her hand on the table edge.
Thank you, my lady.
Thank the gods, Poxenarian, for their bounty. I have done nothing yet to deserve your thanks. Chapter 19. Argalt, when she finally located him again, after losing herself in a maze of passages on the ground floor, looked her up and down.
Training, master, eh? So, you're going to become a knight of Holy Gerd, are you? Or a marshal? Or is it paladin you're thinking of?
Pox felt her ears burning again.
I don't know, sir.
Argalt snorted.
I'm no sir. Not even to the newest member of the training company. Argalt, that's my name, and that's what you'll call me, young woman.
Yes, sir. Argalt.
That's better. You're no hothouse flower of a noble house. Where are you from?
Pox told him. He looked at her with surprising respect.
Sheep farmer's daughter? That's like Gerd's daughter herself, barring he raised cattle and grain, so the story goes. But still it means you know what work is, I'll say, and a few blisters on the hands. Where'd you learn to wear a sword like you could use it?
When she mentioned the Duke's name, he stared.
You were in the Fox's company? And came here? I'll believe anything after that.
He shook his head as he led her across the courtyard, past the Lord's Hall.
I was in the guards at Varela when I was young. What I don't know about that Duke.
But Pox asked nothing, and did not expect that he would have answered if she had. He gave her a long look outside the training master's office.
If you need someone to talk to sometime, sheep farmer's daughter, I'll share a tankard of ale with you.
Thank you,
said Pox, still not sure of his reasons. He nodded and turned away. The training master was a hand taller than Pox herself, a hard, muscular man in dark blue tunic and trousers, with Gerd's crescent embroidered on the breast. He read the Marshal General's note and Sedfer's letter in tight-lipped silence. When he looked up, his ice-blue eyes were hard.
If you're to catch up with the others, you'll have to work, and work hard.
You'd best not loll about.
Pox repressed a surge of anger. She'd never been lazy.
No, sir, she said stiffly.
It means extra work for the instructors as well. I shall take you myself for tactics in the evenings after supper. I hope Sedfer's right about your weapons skills. That would let us chop a glass or so off there and give you more time in supply, though why the Marshal General bothers with that for you is beyond me.
Pox felt her shoulders tighten and forced herself to be still. He sighed heavily.
Very well, then. How much gear do you have?
Only what was in my saddlebag, sir, said Pox. I suppose it's...
They'll have brought it to your quarters.
He glanced for a moment at a chart on his wall.
Let me think. There's a room on the third floor, next to the end of the corridor. You can have that for now. It's small, but it won't mean moving anyone else tonight. If it's too small, we can change things in a week or so.
If you stay that long, his tone clearly said.
You'll need clothes. I'll have the steward send something up. Come along.
He pushed past her to the corridor and led the way upstairs. The room he opened seemed amply large to Pox, larger than her room at the Jolly Potboy, with two windows looking out over a lower roof to a walled field. Besides a bed and chest and a curtained alcove with hooks, it had a table, stool, and low chair. A narrow shelf ran along the wall over the table. Several blankets were folded neatly on the foot of the bed. Pox had hardly taken all this in when he began speaking again.
Students do not wear weapons except at practice, he said with a pointed glance at her sword. We prefer that personal weapons be stored in the armory, but the Marshal General has given permission for you to keep yours with you.
Pox did not want to let the magic sword out of her control. She said nothing. Just then a servant came in with her saddlebags. Behind him was the steward, with an armful of clothing, all dark gray but for the blue cloak. The steward eyed her.
You said tall, Master Channis. This should fit near enough for now. What name do you use, Poxenarian or Dorthan's daughter?
Pox is all.
Poxenarian, said the steward cheerfully. I need something long enough it can't be mistaken in anyone's handwriting. Come by for measurements, or if you have something that fits well.
Pox unstrapped her saddlebags and pulled out her green shirt. Will this do?
Good. Good material, too, from Leonya, is it?
No, but near there, Brewer's Bridge.
The steward shook her head.
I don't know it. Trousers, too, if you've an extra pair.
Pox pulled out the patched ones, which the steward took without comment, and handed over a pair of socks as well. The steward checked the number of blankets and left the room.
If you're ready, said the training master, there is time to see the weapons instructors before supper. No need to change now. In the morning is soon enough.
Pox set her swords neatly on the shelf, and the saddlebags behind the curtain, before following him out of the room.
You have fought mostly in a mercenary company, I understand.
Yes, sir.
Short sword or pole arm?
Short sword.
But you carry a long sword?
Yes, sir.
Have you used a bow?
In training, yes. It's not my best weapon.
Pole arms?
Only in training.
Mace, axe, crossbow, siege weaponry?
At each shake of her head, his lips seemed to tighten. Pox wondered if he really thought all of those important. She had trouble keeping up with his long, sweeping strides and noticed little of the building around them, only rows of doors open and shut, and the stone flags of the hallway. They came out into a small court, surrounded on three sides by stables. A pile of dung centered the court, and two youths were shoveling it into a cart. Past a row of box stalls, each holding a massive warhorse, the training master ducked through a narrow archway into another passage. This time they emerged on the edge of the walled field Pox had seen from her windows. On their right, the stone building sprouted a long finger. The training master turned toward this. It was a single room, and resembled a small grange, except that it had no platform and no doors at the far end, only the one on either side. It was empty at the moment, but Pox could hear grunts and the clash of weapons from the far side. The training master led her through it and out the other door. Here were perhaps a score of fighters, all in training gray, practicing with swords, and, Pox was surprised to see, hawks. To one side, a burly man in blue watched them closely. He glanced over at the training master and waved. Pox followed, as they walked around the training area to meet him.
This is Poxenarian Dorthan's daughter, said the training master abruptly.
The Marshal General has assigned her to this class.
Sharp black eyes met hers.
Ha! She's no novice. So I understand. If you can spare her for more time in other studies, Sieri, do so. Am I to hood hawks, so they may learn music?
Pox thought by the tone that this was an old argument begun again. The training master's face relaxed.
There are other skills of war, Sieri. Oh, and so there are, but none of them any good if you can't keep a blade from your guts.
He shook his head.
Never mind, Chanis. I know what you mean, and the Marshal General, too. If she can spare the time, I'll see to it, but only if. Understand that.
He cocked his head at Pox and looked her over.
See that she knows where to go when you're through, said the training master.
He turned to Pox.
Gerd be with you, Poxenarian. If you have any need, come to my office at any time.
Thank you, sir, said Pox, still ruffled.
Well, now.
Sieri, the weapons master, was walking around her. She turned to watch him.
Where have you fought? What weapons? I see marks of a longsword on your clothes.
For the third time that day, Pox outlined her training. Sieri, at least, showed no doubt.
That's good. 3 fighting seasons with Phelan. That means you know your way with short sword and formation fighting, and you've used a long sword since. Very good. Many who come to us with your background cannot fight without the others in formation. Not until I've trained them, that is.
He grinned broadly. For all that he was younger and heavier, he reminded Pox of Saiger.
What about unarmed combat?
I've done it, said Pox, cautiously. She knew that Saiger himself had mastered only a few of the many styles.
Can you fight mounted? I know Phelan has infantry.
I have, some. Marshal Sedfer in Brewersbridge was teaching me, and I fought a little with a sword.
Without cutting up the horse? Good. I see you're wearing mail. Chanis didn't give you time to change, eh? But we don't wear mail in practice sessions. You must not come to count on it. Today I'll test you, but tomorrow you show up in training uniform, right?
Yes, sir. Pox noticed that the others were watching covertly, slowing their own practice to see what she was doing. Sieri noticed that too and bellowed at them.
Gerd's gut, may the ale hold out. You dolts keep gaping like that and I'll run you all around the field 10 times before supper. Do you think an enemy'd let you gaze all around like a bunch of calves in pasture? Get to your work, or...
But the tempo had speeded back up at once. Sieri picked up 2 swords from a stack near the edge of the practice area.
Here, we'll start with what you're comfortable with.
Pox took a sword and moved it, testing its balance. It was heavier than her own and broader across the blade. Sieri stood casually, touched her blade with the tip of his, and leaped in so fast that she almost missed her own stroke.
Aha, he said. If you were that slow with enemies, you would have more scars than you do. Don't hold back, girl. I'm better than Sedfer, if you want the truth of it.
Indeed he was, and Pox found herself working hard to keep his blade from clashing on her mail. She had gotten used to the delicate balance of the magic sword, that responsive light spring, and she felt at first that she was fencing with a length of iron firewood. Several minutes later, sweating freely, she found her balance and tried offensive strokes as well as defensive. Sieri countered them easily, but grinned even more widely.
You're learning, he said. You've got a reach on you, too, and reasonable speed.
He tried one of the tricks she knew about, and she thrust it aside, lunging quickly to mark his tunic.
And you know something. Very good. You haven't wasted your time.
But in a flash, he shifted his blade to the other hand. Pox, confused, missed her parry and felt the sharp blow along her side. Another, in the same place, and then she countered with a blow that drove him back a step. She had forgotten that he wore no mail, until, after a very fast exchange of heavy blows, she caught his arm and blood darkened the tunic.
Hold, he said.
But she had already lowered her blade. He glanced at his arm, and then at her with new respect.
You do know something. By Gerd! We may have a swordsman in this class after all.
I'm sorry, she started to say.
No matter. In a hall full of marshals, little wounds like these are no problem. Look here.
He pulled aside the ripped sleeve to show a narrow, jagged wound already closing.
You must all learn to fight, and strongly, and therefore I take a lot of healing.
Pox was startled, but I thought... He looked closely at her.
Oh, you're not girdish, are you? Most are. With an arm like that, you should be. It's nothing here. Marshals can heal themselves as well as others, and Gerd does not begrudge healing to weapons masters.
Then you're...
A marshal, yes. You didn't know. Most of your instructors here are marshals.
Oh.
Now put away that sword you obviously know how to use, not that you can't learn more, and let's see what you do with staves.
Pox had never fought with staves before, and collected a quantity of bruises proving her incompetence. Sieri then tried her in archery. Her form, he said, was passable, but her ability to judge windage was abysmal. She could not throw a javelin at all, and when he saw her grip on a battle axe, he told her to put it down at once.
And I won't have you try unarmed combat in mail just yet. Tomorrow will do for that.
By this time, Pox was sweaty, tired, and sore enough to be glad of a rest.
You're beyond most of the class in sword handling, he said, after thinking a few moments. Some of them have had lessons for years, but no actual fighting. That's what makes the difference. You'll need regular practice with the sword, but instead of new tricks with it, I want to improve your other weapons skills. When you finish, you should be able to instruct with at least 5 weapons. More if you're interested. Tomorrow morning, come with the others for mounted drill. Do you have your own horse?
Yes, sir.
Well, you can ride your own horse tomorrow. If it's trained enough, you'll bring it to every session, but we switch around. Marshal Doggle takes most of the mounted classes. Mounted work first thing in the morning, then your other studies before and after lunch, then drill here. Is that clear?
Yes, sir, but what about my horse? Where is he? And what about grooming?
You've been caring for your own? Good, good. You won't do that for a while. This autumn session we keep the class busy enough without, but in the spring each student is assigned a mount to care for. Just show up at the right time in the mornings and saddle up.
Oh. Pox thought of explaining Sox's character, but decided not to.
Now.
He looked at her closely.